Okay, so here we have Boaz and Ruth, and last time in chapter 2, Ruth, boy, I'm really struggling here. Ruth. I'm doing the Noah. Noah always likes to say the, if you put two words together, he switches the first letter of each of them around, and it messes with your mind, I guess. But my mind's such a mess that that's what I do normally. So, anyways, Ruth meets Boaz in chapter 2 there, and we find that she stays within his field, or she's instructed, and all through this, Naomi is instructing her where and what to do. I think it's important when we look at Ruth is that we don't make it today as it is today, because this is what it isn't, right? It isn't this is a love relationship that's going on here. We're so used to these guys aren't dating, okay? These guys aren't dating. Matter of fact, we'll see it tonight. It's actually a group date. Right? They're surrounded. And it's before the proposal's even made by Ruth herself, that they're surrounded by these women, these young men and these women that Naomi advises them to stay in. I'd like to advise our kids today to stay in groups. Right? So much of the relationship nowadays is when can I get alone with her or him or whatever, you know, and then it leads to a physical relationship rather than a true relationship in which the Lord founds. But remember, this is in the day of Judges. I think that's important to remember, that this is in the day of Judges. There's a lot of bad things that are going on. And this happens to be a highlight from Judges, that period of time. And remember, Israel is under the conditions of the law that we saw when we visited Leviticus. You'll see it in Numbers. You'll see it in Deuteronomy. They're under this kinsman redeemer law, in a sense, if you would. And there was purpose behind it. See, the purpose behind the kinsman redeemer law was one reason was to keep Israel whole, right? To make sure that Israel stayed whole, that God's people stayed whole. And I think it would be great if we could do that even today, that God's people would stay whole. You know, there's some importance here with keeping them whole, right? God's people. So, we're in chapter 3, verse 1. Why don't we go down through here a little bit? It says, then Naomi... So, let's actually back up one step into chapter 2 there, verse 23. It says, so she stayed close by the women's... well, actually, let's go up one more verse to 22. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field, that this is the field, right, that you should be in. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. It's important there that you see something. You see that it was right through to the end of the harvest. Right? It was right through to the end of the harvest. What does that mean? That means there was a lot of time there. Right? She spent a lot of time in the field of Boaz. Almost, you know, like us, you know, we should be spending a lot of time in God's field. You know, we should be setting ourselves in there and just waiting for that day. The day when Jesus returns and takes us home, that harvest, that one harvest, right? That major harvest that we're just waiting for. We're anticipating. We sang about anticipation tonight with it, right? That we're anticipating that. What a wonderful thing. So here we have this time in which they, I'm talking Boaz and Ruth, they actually get to spend time together, but it isn't quite the date night that you would see in America, right? Let's get rid of all the people and let's me and you go out on a date, right? It's not like that at all. It says, then Naomi and her mother-in-law said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Now Boaz, whose young women you are with, is he not our relative? Well, you know, Naomi's saying here, hey, look at, you know, isn't it important that you have security? Isn't it important? And, you know, if we went back to Ruth chapter 9 there, the same word is, or chapter 1, I'm sorry, verse 9. See, I am saying everything backwards tonight. So if you want, just, you know, no, hopefully it won't be that bad. Verse 9, "The Lord grant that you may find rest." It's the same word that's used here for security. Each in the house of her husband. It speaks there of the marriage, the security of marriage. Isn't it supposed to be a restful thing? You know, and it should be. It should be rest, right? God doesn't create disorder. It's us that create the disorder, right? Why? Because we don't follow what God has told us to do. But security, isn't it? Shouldn't I be worried about your security? Shouldn't I be interested in who you're going to marry? In other words, that you're going to find your rest in? Shall I not seek security for you? Now Boaz, is he not our relative? What's Naomi doing here? Well, again, if we look at it in today's language, we would think, well, gee, maybe she's after him. We already know what chapter 1 told us about him, right? That he's wealthy. But see, the kinsman redeemer was part of God's way of keeping the nation whole. It was to redeem them, right? To bring them to the place for the Lord. Is he not our relative? She's just pointing out, isn't he, in a sense, he is the kinsman redeemer. He's the one that is supposed to redeem you, isn't he? She's posing that question to him. She isn't what we would call a gold digger today, or someone that is hunting a man down for specific wealth, right? This is not what she's doing. No, she's finally, look at her husband Elimelech and her went, disregarded what God's promise was, went to a foreign land. Now she has come back, right, to this land to live according to what the Lord has granted. And she finds Boaz, and Boaz withstood the famine of the land. And now she went to another country, and it was a disaster because she wasn't following the Lord, or her and her husband weren't, right? Fear of this world might drive us to do certain things that we shouldn't do. And so she goes there. Now she's coming back. I see it as a repentance here. Let's get back to what God's ordained. And one of the things that he ordained was this position or the responsibility of this kinsman redeemer. In a sense, we could say, well, it's not it's not quite ladylike, though, to force yourself upon a man. Well, we'll see in this that she wasn't forcing herself at all. There was no forcing here. That relative was called a Guel, which is a kinsman redeemer. And they had certain responsibilities, which I think are unique and should be observed here. One found in Leviticus 25, actually a couple of them found in Leviticus 25. One was to buy the, sometimes the Israelites, right, would turn themselves over into slavery because so that they could feed their family and whatnot. The kinsman redeemer's responsibility was, if he was able, right, was to go, that close relative, to go to them and buy them back out of slavery. I like that because there was no real condition of did they deserve it. The condition was that God told them to do it, so they went out there and they bought them back. Also in Leviticus 25:25, if they had sold off a portion of the land, in order to live, you know, they kind of forfeited their right to that land. The kinsman redeemer would be able to go out if he could, right? Would go out and buy that land back. Why? Remember, it's about Israel being whole. Right, keeping Israel whole, and that was what God was doing here. Right, it was kind of that, you know, looking out for the other. Right, it was kind of built around that, where like in the church today, we should be looking out for the others in the body of Christ. Right, we should be doing that first before we go and witness to somebody out on the street. Right, we should be taking care of God's people. That's what it was designed for. In Numbers 35:19, it talks about the avenger of blood. It talks about if there was one that had murdered a specific family member and they were brought to justice, then this kinsman redeemer could exercise justice. Why? Because they had dishonored. They had dishonored Israel. Remember, this is about keeping Israel whole. You know. Deuteronomy 25, 5 through 10, goes on to talk about caring for the family name by marrying a childless widow. Again, to extend the name of the family member. And now we see Boaz, the Guel, for the family of Elimelech. Though it might seem strange to us, because we don't necessarily think this way, right? This was something that was in light of what God had told them to do. The purpose of the Goel is to preserve the family name, or hence, really, Israel. Partway through verse 2 there, in fact, she said to him, her, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garments and go down to the thrashing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. And she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. Of course, that hopefully is our answer to the Lord. As the Lord would ask us to do things, we would say, Lord, whatever it is that you want me to do, I will do. We won't sit there and argue with him. This is a good example of a good daughter's response to the mother. Even though she was considered the daughter-in-law, she still responded and respectfully so, and did pursued what her mother-in-law would ask her to do. Wash yourself. Wash yourself. Prepare yourself. Make yourself ready. If you can think about who Ruth was for a minute, you know, she was the one that was gleaning the wheat or the barley out in the field. And she wasn't necessarily the had the probably best clothes to wear. You know, maybe she had one pair of one shirt, one dress, whatever, and she was constantly rinsing and cleaning that off, but that's what she had. It's funny here, she didn't ask her to change herself, she just said be presentable, be yourself, you know, clean up, maybe get rid of your smell. You know, maybe she was smelling pretty ripe after being in the fields for a while, right? But clean up, be respectful. You're going to go and meet this man and put on your best image of yourself. And then she says, do not disturb him during his feast. But when he lays down, uncover his feet, and lay down there. And I know, in today's world, we pervert all this. We say, oh, now she's a whore. She's going in a harlot here, and she's going to lay at this guy's feet. What is she doing, thrusting herself upon this man? It's not a provocative measure here or a gesture. This is something that shows us something about her character. Number one, she was doing as she was told by her mother-in-law. Number two, it shows us an act of total submission, right? That she laid at his feet, at her master's feet, that she had stayed in his field over this time, all the way through until the end of the barley and wheat harvest. She had dwelt there, and she would certainly was submitting to him. And the one thing to remember about the Gual here is that the kinsman redeemer, that she had, in a sense, she had a right to him, because it was God's way of doing things to keep Israel together. So she had a right to him. Should she have been a little bit more forceful and went in and said, "By golly, Boaz, you need to marry me because I have a right to you. You're the closest of kin, and you better marry me." But she didn't do that, did she? She went in. And you can see here she laid at his feet, the humility there, the respect for him, you know, not to, even though she was told not to disturb him during his feast, she had a certain respect when she was in his presence that he was there, and she wasn't going to disturb him. And certainly there was a trust that she had in him. So she was entrusting herself in his presence. "He will tell you," she said, "he will tell you what you should do." And of course, as Naomi says that, you should think of, well, gee, it's apparent here that not only does Ruth trust him, but certainly Naomi trusts him as well. So there's a certain underlying trust here that they have for Boaz. Remember, they were in the field together, right? Sorry, I'm going to sneeze. Maybe not now that I said it right. So there's a certain amount of trust. He was a good, godly man here. And her acceptance there was, I will, right? I will do what you've asked. I will listen to wisdom. Verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed. I like that, all. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was cheerful. He went to lie down at the feet of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and laid down. Well, we see here, as we said before, this book was written during the time of Judges, and we understand the environment of Judges, how it was cyclic, right? With disobedience to the Lord, blessings poured out from the Lord, complacency, and then went right into unrepentant and rebellion against the Lord. So the atmosphere there was probably not a good atmosphere. A lot of looting could have been going on. He obviously stayed at the threshing floor because it was an important time to stay there, because all the crops are gone. All the harvesting is over. You know, everything that had been harvested is at the threshing floor being processed. And obviously, this is where he got his wealth. And he is no dummy, right? He's a rich man. He got his wealth this way. And so he's going to sleep there and make sure that there is nobody that comes in and rips him off. And so when she sees him there, she comes, it says, softly, uncovers his feet and does exactly what Naomi had instructed her to do. It says, now it happened at midnight that the man was startled. Why would he be startled if he didn't think somebody might have been coming in to rob him, right? He was startled, and certainly they say it's the darkest hour, midnight, right? And so it's the darkest hour. He thinks he's alone, but he's not. And you know how we get sometimes when we think we're alone, but then we find out we're not. And turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet, and he said, "Who are you?" Of course, he wouldn't know who she was, because it was midnight, right? It was dark. So he had asked the obvious question, "Who are you?" So she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative," that close relative, Goel, or Redeemer, as we would say. So the darkest hour, he's ready for the thieves. Ruth is at his feet. She identifies herself. And look how she presents herself. If there's any question here about who Ruth is and what her character is, she says, "I am Ruth, your maidservant." She doesn't say, present to him, "I have a right to you. That's why I'm here." Right? There's a humble spirit here. There's a humble spirit within this woman. And so she says, "Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." She does propose here for to him, right? This is a proposal, right? For him to marry her. I don't see any other thing here other than she, that under your wing could say, could also be said, spread the cover of your garment over me. And it's a sign there of marriage. It's when God in Ezekiel 16 was showing his love towards Israel, he used kind of the same terminology there, you know, under the wing, you know, that, you know, the nation of Israel was in a sense what God had seen as his bride there. For you are a close relative. So, you know, you don't see her slamming in here. She's right, and certainly this is bold in a sense, but I don't think it's inappropriate. Right? Why? Because that's what's been instructed. See, she's following Naomi's God, therefore she is there part of this agreement that the Lord would put together there. Then his response, it says, and then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men. Remember the young men that were there. They were supposed to be there to provide her with, you know, drink or whatever the case was. But being young herself, it could be appealing for her to go after a young man, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you requested, and all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. So his response is very commending to Ruth, right? For you have shown more kindness. You did not go after the young men. You don't care about the richness or the poorness of a man. And so she, and then after that it says, all the people of the town. Remember, she was hanging out with these women and these men that were his servants working in that field. And over that period of time, of the harvest, they got to know her to the point that they referred to her as a virtuous woman, right? She wasn't hung up on the appearance of him not being young. She wasn't putting her decision making here upon what she saw with her eyes, but she was following the command of the Lord, how they were supposed to deal with widows. It also shows here the character of Boaz. He could have very well sent his servants after her, since he was the kinsman redeemer, but he didn't. I think we see a little picture of Christ here. You know, Christ could grab everybody's heart in this whole world, but he doesn't. And the reason why is, I think, is because with Boaz and with Jesus wants us to desire him. right? He puts out all the, He draws us in with His Holy Spirit and He gives us opportunities as we get, as we're, the gospel shared with us. But in the same token, it is our choice that we want to join, be joined with Him. So, even though Boaz could have, he was rich enough and strong enough to go out and gather in her, he didn't either. And he was obviously attracted to her character because of the good report that was by the townspeople and, you know, the virtuous woman, you know, and I always, when I hear that term, right, my mind automatically goes to Proverbs 31, you know, which talks about what a virtuous wife should be, you know. The qualities there aren't external beauty, it's all internal beauty, right? It's that's what Boaz saw, you know. And we could obviously spend quite a long time on Proverbs 31. Verse 12, now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning, it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good. Let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. So, a possible issue here, right, arises. He understands, well, I'm not the closest. I'm not the one. But there is one that is closer. There's one that has to have the right above myself. Even though he wanted this relationship, it wasn't for him right then that he had to pursue this other closer relative. So we see, again, a character reference here for Boaz. You know, it was more important for Boaz to follow God's will rather than his own desires. Even though he saw her as a great woman, right? And he had all the townspeople saying the same thing. He was willing to set that aside because he wanted to follow God's will, even though his desire was to accept the proposal. So she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman come to the threshing floor." Also he said, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 ephah of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. So now she's getting ready to leave. I find it interesting that in this verse that so before he left, there was going to be a blessing that he gives her. this 6 Ephrah, if you look that up, which I did, it actually equals, an Ephrah is 5 gallons or 0.65 bushels. So if you've ever picked up a bushel of grain, I don't know if any of us ever have. I've picked up a 100-pound bag of feed. That's probably up there into the bushel, maybe a little more than a bushel. I don't know, you know. But if you think about her shaw being the bag, I guess, and he's going to provide that all this grain for her family as she goes back. That's probably too much, much more than she can even physically handle. So what does it mean here that she held it out and he measured 6 ephahs of barley? Well, my answer is I don't know. I think that it might be that there is something to do with that 6, right? Some people say it's the 6 men that came out of her as far as the descendants go. There's a certain blessing here, right? That Boaz abundantly provides for Ruth, just pours out to her. Right? Because why? Because he loves her so. It's like when we figure it out, right? Jesus just wants to pour out his blessings upon us. Why? Because he loves us so. Aren't you just astounded by how the Lord just blesses us sometimes? We go, wow, Lord, how? Almost, sometimes it's almost overwhelmingly that way. You go, wow, Lord, I can't believe, how did I deserve this? And I see that picture here a little bit where Boaz just throws all this grain at her. What did I do to deserve this? I was just a maidservant in your fields. And Boaz says, I love you. I want to pour out my love to you. But anyways, some people think it's the 6 men that follow. Right? David. Right? Because we know that Obed bore Jesse, and Jesse, David. Right? King David. The other one was Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and then, of course, we see the Messiah come through, right? So, some people think it's that. I think it gives you a good picture of the Lord's love for his bride. It's the overabundance of mercies, or of blessings, I'm sorry. Then she came to her mother-in-law. She said, is that you, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, all the blessings. And she said, these 6 ephahs of barley he gave me. For he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Then she said, sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the latter this day. So here's a little anxious time for them, right, as they sit and they wait to see if this man will step forward. Then it goes on in verse 1 of chapter 4. It says, and Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, come aside, friend. Sit down here. So he came aside and sat down. It's one of those callings from a friend that you're wondering, uh-oh, what's up? Right? Come on in here. Sit down. Got something to say to you. Don't we always picture bad news? We always think of the bad news. Oh, they're gonna leave town, or they're gonna move to, you know, India or wherever, right? Which happened to us once, actually, with some friends. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. And he said to the close relative, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it. And I am next after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Sounds pretty good when you get a piece of merchandise, in a sense, right? When you get that land and you're thinking, okay, I'll do that. I'll take the land. And then Boaz said, on the day that you buy the field, the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetrate the name of the dead through his inheritance. Now, when there's a clause to the purchase, now it becomes a little, now you got to think about this a little more, you know, because it seemed like this guy was very much in it, you know, as Boaz's heart sunk, thinking he is going to redeem, right? It seemed like he stepped forward there. And the close relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. It seemed to me like it was a self-centered thing there for the one that was supposed to redeem. And he says, no, I can't do it. It'll ruin my own inheritance, you know. So he hands over his inheritance there, or his redemptive power, I guess, to Boaz. Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal and gave it to another. And this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore, the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal, and Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses in this day that I have bought all that Elimelech and all that Chileans and Malan from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Malan, I have acquired as my wife to perpetrate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. What's interesting is that the whole thing isn't totally explained here, because we know that Scripture tells us there that the sandal was part of it, but if the Redeemer didn't want to redeem, the one would go up to him and spit in his face. So You know, it wasn't necessarily this easy, right? Just the taking off the sandal, but the one that was supposed to have been redeemed was going to spit in the face of that one that refused to. And all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman." So now we know as we get toward the end here. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life, and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has bore him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. Also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "There is a son born to Naomi." And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram, and Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nahshon, and Nahshon begot Salam, and Salam begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Obed, and Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. And then we could continue that even through the six blessings there, the men that I named earlier there, that some think that the six Ephras were connected to. So there you have it. So a beautiful love story of redemption. You know, redeeming, you know, and as we look at this, what do we gather? Well, Naomi was an Israelite, right? She was from Israel. She was a Benjamite, right? Who had, her and her husband had left, went to Moab. Moab, when they came back, they brought here Ruth, a Gentile. And then Boaz redeems her, just as a picture of the church being redeemed by Jesus himself. You know, even though Israel's the chosen people, the Gentiles, because of what Christ has done for us, have been redeemed. So it's a beautiful love story, and it really corresponds with Christ and what he's done for us, you know, how he went to lengths to redeem us. So